Hey everybody, it's Leonard Maltin, and this is Maltin on Movies with Baron Vaughn, without Baron Vaughn. Baron is working. If you grow up in, or live in Hollywood, Los Angeles area, it's a company town. And there's certain things that you come to expect and understand. And one is, the only excuse for somebody's absence that is unquestioned is, they're working. Working on a show, working on a movie, he's working.
Some people have dogs that eat their homework. Some people have actor friends who disappear for months on end.
Baron is legitimately working on season two of Grace and Frankie. Frankie and Grace? Did they just get
Grace
it wrong?
Grace and Frankie. Grace and Frankie. You said it right the first time.
Wow. So
you got to stop drinking before the podcast.
I think so. In his stead, in his place, in his chair, you will find my daughter, Jessie. Hi, Jess.
Hi, I didn't know I was in his chair. Does he want me to move?
No, he's not here.
I don't want to insult the guy.
He'll never know.
Oh, well.
Welcome back, honey.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
And we're calling today's episode Adventures in Moviegoing.
Yes.
Because we're going to talk about all different facets of moviegoing, the moviegoing experience, and some of the films. Yes, we will recommend some films that you discover along the way. Now, I had a funny experience just the other day. I went to a theater to see a film I had missed at a press screening. Some of you know I've been under the weather a little bit, and I'm behind. I'm trying to catch up. So I went to see this particular movie, which we'll discuss in a minute or two. And I was using the men's room, as one does. And a fellow, as we were leaving, looked at me and said, "You're Leonard Maltin." I said, "Yeah." He said, you actually go to the movies, to a movie theater?" I said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "Oh, that's nice."
I would just like to read the note that you made in our little notes here where it says, "Man in men's room was surprised to see me at an actual movie theater." I think that's going to be the name of your memoir someday. Man in men's room.
Remind me not to use that as the name of my memoir, by the way.
I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
I just found that amusing.
Oh, it always is. We have it all the time when we go to movie theaters and people just go, "Are you you?" Yeah. So you go to movies for fun, huh? Yeah.
I do that too. Now, most of the time, I do see them at previews. Living here in L.A., as when I lived in New York, was the same thing. Other major cities, there are media screenings, press screenings, which are sometimes held in a big theater, sometimes held in a small screening room, and a way of seeing them on deadline, if you're going to cover the film before it opens or as it opens. And so most of the films I see in movie theaters are ones that I've missed, I want to catch up with.
Or something that just interests you?
Yeah, something I just feel like seeing. And I like going to the movies. My wife and I really enjoy going to the movies. We always have. We always will. We hold hands.
They're very cute.
We like
But you can't share popcorn with Mr. Maltin over here because he eats it way too damn fast.
Well, let's not go into that.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
I always warn him that someday when I write my tell-all pamphlet, he's going to be really sorry he eats all my popcorn. That's the first line. Maltin steals your popcorn.
But the thing is, that's how I really want to see every movie. Yeah. Now, in this day and age, it's not possible. Yeah. And it's also not only not possible, but it's so convenient and so practical sometimes to watch, especially a smaller movie, a documentary, a little indie film. Might not lose quite so much on the smaller screen, seeing it at home.
We try in general to sort of – if there's a movie, if there's a big movie coming out, you know, that's supposed to be an epic and all the effects, what have you, we try to see a movie in the way that it's meant to be seen, which in general is in a movie theater. On occasion, though, we do find if we can't get to a theater that indies, that documentaries, some of these things can carry the same weight on a small screen because they're
smaller. By small screen, I mean, you know, it's your home screen on a television set. I don't mean iPhone.
Yeah, no, not iPhone. Although with the new 6 Plus, I think we could screen that pretty easily.
Yeah,
but
I still don't want to do that.
No, me either. We love going to the movies. We really enjoy it.
So in this case, here's what happened. I didn't see Straight Outta Compton at a preview.
Now, hang on. I just have to – every child has dreams, okay? Every single one. And when your mother and father tell you that they're going to be going to see Straight Outta Compton together – it's like Christmas done, or in our case, Hanukkah done come early, and sending them off to see this motion picture filled me with so much joy.
I'll confess, I was a little wary about this movie, not because of the quality of the movie or the quality of the movie making, but because I knew so little about the subject. That's just the plain truth.
You know who Dr. Dre is
yes,
now.
Yes, exactly. Now I know who Ice Cube is.
We were
I know who all these guys are.
But my dad's coming to them at a very different stage in their career. Mm-hmm. He knows Ice Cube as an actor primarily, mm-hmm. And Dr. Dre as sort of this mogul. And so we talked about before the film opened. We talked about, you know, do you think I'd like it? Do you think it would speak to me? Would it make sense?
I mean, I never followed NWA. I never followed their music careers. I never followed their whole journey from Compton.
Yeah,
you know, breaking through the music world as they did. Smashing down barriers as they did, social barriers, language barriers, yeah. All sorts of things. And so, you know, as I say, I was a little wary. Not every movie is made for every person in the audience. And I didn't know if I was the audience for this film. Well, I really liked it. I really liked it. So did my wife. It's good storytelling, good movie making. I read a couple of things about it afterwards that questioned some of their choices. The fact that the people involved in the film had such control over the film. I mean, F. Gary Gray directed it, and there are several screenwriters, you know, credited for it. But all the principals were producers of mm-hmm. the film in one way or another. So this is their interpretation and their version of their story. I accept that. And I am not one who accepts movie making, even biographical movie making, as the
fact.
Unvarnished truth.
Yeah, no, that's something that we say a lot, even with documentaries, is you have to remember that you're not, you know, things are going to get swayed by whoever's making the film.
But I found it very compelling. I did find it very compelling and very interesting, and it opened my eyes to some things too.
Yeah.
Because I've lived in L.A. now for almost 32 years. So I was here and did witness some of the history that this covers. All sorts of things that changes, evolution, and things that haven't changed. Things that sadly haven't changed.
Yeah.
So I found it utterly compelling. Some of it does get into what we might call standard musical biopic turf, getting cheated by a record company, getting hooked up with a manager who takes advantage, money being a divisive factor in a group coming together and then falling apart. All of those we have seen those things before because they're true.
Yeah,
you know they're all based on real life things, and you can find that in La Bamba. You can find that in any number of films going back decades.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's any less interesting or any less valid dramatically. And the casting's very, very good. The young actors are all very – I mean, you believe them. I think that's the essence of it, is you believe them. And that's why I like the movie, which gets to one of the topics we wanted to cover today, which is accepting a movie for what it is, not what it isn't. Now, I don't happen to like graphic, gory horror movies. I'm too much of a wimp. We've talked about this on the podcast before.
My mom and I have bruises.
Yeah. Yes.
He jumps. He squeezes. He gets very upset.
I don't enjoy them as fun. They're not fun for me because I get too involved. So I try to avoid those.
I just had this memory of watching The Sixth Sense with you. There was one particular scene where you leapt out of your seat.
A jump move.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, dear.
I still say Alice, my wife, still has some bruises from seeing Jaws.
I can only imagine.
40 years ago.
I can only imagine.
First going together. But that's
like
just
rings
me.
Rings on a tree. Right. You can see how long you've been married.
So, you know, so why would I put myself through that? And I generally don't.
Yep.
But then every now and then I'll hear about a movie like Let the Right One In, that incredible Swedish movie.
Which we watched together, yeah.
Which is just an extraordinary piece of movie making.
Yeah.
And it has some, you know, some really graphic and violent moments, as does the very good American remake, which Baron and I discussed, Let Me In.
Yeah.
In fact, I understand our fellow podcast, The Canon, is discussing the original Swedish versus the American remake on their show this week. And it's interesting fodder. Always is.
Yeah.
But those are, in my opinion, that's one of the best Americanizations I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Of a foreign language film. But it's also one of the few that I could not only tolerate, but I could get into.
Yeah.
And accept.
Well, that's, you know, and that's something that we come back to a lot, which is storytelling.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that we all have the stuff that we are immediately drawn to, whatever that may be. But it's also important to be willing to see something that may not immediately sing to you. And maybe go outside your comfort zone a little bit, because you never know. You never know what you're going to find.
It's not always easy to do. Let's face it. You know, you're home, making a decision. Do you feel like going out tonight? Do you feel like driving somewhere, parking, doing whatever you have to do physically to get to see the movie?
Mm-hmm.
And are you going to do that to see something that
you're unsure of?
You're unsure of, that, you know, you're not really certain that that's what you're in the mood for.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes you just have to try. Sometimes you have to push.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get pushed.
Yeah.
And that helps too.
Yeah.
We'll get to some of those circumstances in a little while.
Yeah.
I found that one of my big journeys this past decade has been making my peace, or trying to make my peace, with the new era of raunchy comedy.
Yes.
This has been a journey.
Yes.
I think my best guide on this journey overall has been Judd Apatow. Because I find that his films are smarter, more aware. He certainly writes better and more interesting female characters than most comedy screenwriters.
Yes.
Due in part to the fact that he's married to an actress, Leslie Mann, a very talented actress.
Yeah.
And she, I think, has raised his consciousness on this level. He's talked about that.
Yeah.
And that's helped. That's helped a bit. But I think the film that surprised me the most that led me on this path was one we saw together, which was The Hangover.
And I always bring up this movie because something I find really interesting is when my parents – when the three of us go to a movie, because you have three very different opinions and three very different sensibilities. I find a lot of the times my parents don't agree. When they come home from a film and I say, you know, how was it? What'd you think? Almost always one of you liked it more or less, or one of you hated it more than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find it really interesting. If the three of us see something together, how did it affect us? What did it say to us? Did we all like it? Well, when we went to see The Hangover, I kept looking at both my parents, and they were cracking up. They were laughing just as hard as I was. And obviously, you know, there are certain pop culture jokes that won't necessarily translate. We've been in theaters many times over when I lean over and go, that's a band called such and such, and that's why this is funny, or this is a Britney Spears song, and that's why this is funny. But all three of us really enjoyed that movie, and I was most surprised by my mom, because she's the most sensitive to raunchy stuff. You know, she's not a fan. So the fact that we all found it so damn funny, it tickled me. It did. It was a neat thing to experience.
You know, I have to explain. I explain this to my students at USC, who are all, you know, mostly 20-somethings. And I try to do this without sounding like the oldest old fogey on the planet. But when I was growing up, a phrase I try not to use too often, but when I was growing up and even in my early adult years, there was no such thing as raunchy comedy on screen. And when I say there was no such thing, I mean nowhere, nada. Didn't exist.
Yeah.
Prior to the late 60s, the motion picture production code was still in effect. And although clever screenwriters and directors still found ways to edge around it, I mean, you find this hard to believe if it weren't true. But say prior to 1967 or so, 66, 67, certain things that were imposed as rules in the 1930s still applied. About sex on screen, about language on screen, about antisocial behavior on screen, about violence on screen. And things that we now accept and take for granted were verboten. So the extreme of comedy, when I was growing up, Jerry Lewis was considered the extreme. That was the extreme of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The Three Stooges, violence, that was the extreme of comedy. It's so fascinating to compare. And if you've grown up on a diet of accepting that, never hearing four-letter words, not almost never, never hearing four-letter words, never seeing women behaving badly,
mm-hmm.
Doing things, I mean, toilet scenes with, what?
Yeah.
No, unheard of.
Yeah.
Just, it's such a radical change in what is not only permissible, but what is now expected.
Mm-hmm.
Expected. And
that's, that's something, again, that we talk about a lot at home is, how do we feel about now? It's like if you keep upping the ante.
Yes, well, that's the problem.
If you've seen everything.
That's the problem.
And at this point, people are so numb to it just because you're used to it. You're used to seeing this sort of a thing. And so when does it end? Does it end?
Yeah.
At what point do we turn back and go, I don't need to be inside of this person watching them crap. I just don't. I don't need to know what your colon looks like.
Yeah.
And that's the problem is.
Well, the same thing happened in the early 70s when a lot of filmmakers, both young and experienced filmmakers, sort of went crazy. They got drunk with power when all of a sudden they could say these words. All of a sudden, they could do these things that they had never had the opportunity to
Spring
do before.
Break. Yeah,
and so it became gratuitous, kind of like sex and nudity on HBO or Showtime now.
Yeah.
It's almost obligatory because that's what people expect on the pay channels.
Yep.
And there it is, and that's what it was like with American movie making in the early 70s. They were like kids being let loose. Said, go ahead, do what you want, anything you want. And Carl Reiner, the great Carl Reiner, is fond of reminding his good pal Mel Brooks that he opened the door with the beans scene in Blazing Saddles.
It's true.
Prior to which, I don't think there had ever been a flatulence joke in a movie, in a mainstream movie that I can think of. Someone may write in. It's always dangerous to say this is the first.
Yes.
Someone will think of another example. But yes, imagine a time. Try to close your eyes, folks. Just experiment with me. Try to imagine a time without flatulence on screen.
I wouldn't want to be alive.
Yeah, well, I was alive.
I mean, yeah.
I can tell you.
I can't imagine.
It is fascinating. Just as the scene, the then notorious, now historic scene of Ben Stiller in There's Something About Mary.
Oh, God, yeah.
That
I'm
broke
not even
down,
a boy, and it hurts me.
That broke down a barrier. Well, if the Farrelly brothers have broken down that barrier, what are the next guys, or even the Farrellys, going to do in their next movie to top it, to equal it? All right, how do you get more outrageous?
You and watch a movie like Teeth.
Yeah, this is the problem. This is the problem, is that, and it brings up that question, which I find myself asking rhetorically far too often, just because you can, does it mean you should?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I'm answering my rhetorical question by saying no.
Well, I often say spandex is a right, not a privilege. That's how I feel with this sort of stuff is that, just because you can watch someone vomit everything they've eaten in the last year up, you don't have to. You really don't need
not
it.
Not a necessity.
No.
Mm-mm. Not a necessity.
Mm-mm.
But you know what? We're going to talk about other subjects. We're going to talk about an extension of going to the movies, not just in the movie theaters, but at film festivals. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. Friends, I'm excited to introduce you to Howl FM, the best, most convenient way to listen to all the episodes of Maltin on Movies. It's on the web at Howl FM and on the go with the Howl app. You can stream and download all Maltin on Movies episodes that have been released in the past 6 months. Go beyond the audio with behind-the-scenes photos, commentaries, and more. You can even go further by upgrading to Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. Get exclusive access to the entire Maltin on Movies archive and to all the Earwolf and Wolf Pop archives. This includes all episodes older than 6 months. They've all been remastered and have no advertising. Only with Howl Premium, listen to hundreds of hours of Marc Maron's WTF archives. You can hear classic interviews with Robin Williams, Louis C.K., many, many more. And Howl has also partnered with some of your favorite hosts and comedians to develop Howl Originals. Those are brand new shows available only with Howl Premium. You can check out the great new series from Lauren Lapkus and the AV Club right now. There are already 10 brand new hilarious Howl Originals. We're adding new shows every week. Get access to all this exclusive content both on your phone and on your desktop with Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's MALTIN, you get a full month of a free trial. Try it out. Go to Howl FM and enter code Malton at checkout. Remember, you can use Howl on your phone or your computer, but you can only use my promo code on Howl FM, the website. So go to Howl FM, that's HOWL.FM, and use the promo code Malton, MALTIN, for one free month trial of Howl Premium. Give it a try. Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn, without Baron Vaughn today, but with Jesse Malton. Hi, Jess.
Hi. I did steal his clothing, just so you know.
You did.
I wanted to get in character.
Oh, okay.
I am Baron Vaughn.
You're very method.
I'm very method. I steal his clothing. Sorry, Baron.
So you're working from the outside in or the inside out?
Man, let's not even.
We won't even go
It'll
there.
It'll get you deep.
I once had the nerve. I'm not nervy on interviews for the most part. But I once interviewed Samuel L. Jackson, who I like very much and who I admire very much as well.
I love that man.
Well, years ago, a reviewer said about Burt Lancaster in a movie that he's a hair actor.
Yeah.
That seemed to this reviewer that every movie, that it was this primary concern was, what was he going to do with his hair? Well, Samuel Jackson, you know, similarly, changes his facial hair, changes his style, changes his look. And I didn't know if he was sensitive about it, if he would accept it. So I tried to put it on this basis. I said, you know, Laurence Olivier, the great Lord Laurence Olivier, dean of British actors for decades, was known for working on his makeup first. When he got the look, the exterior, then he felt he could explore the character on the interior. So I set that up.
I just picture Samuel L. Jackson sat in front of a vanity putting makeup on going, I am this person.
Well, anyway, he was into it. He said, oh, I'm a hair actor. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he talked about the person he's worked with for many, many years and how they decide on his look for a particular movie. And it's not superficial. It's not at all superficial.
No.
There has to be something on the surface, of course.
Do you remember when you interviewed Gary Oldman?
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about, for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, I'm really proud of myself for saying that name. He tried on something like 200 pairs of glasses.
Looking for the right eyeglasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, don't talk method. Well.
No, but he wanted a certain look.
I'm with you.
Anyway.
So the thing is, but even with that, something that we talk about, I keep repeating that. I apologize. It's, our house is a lot of movie talk.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what you think it is, it is. We're always talking about movies. We are very lucky because we get to go to film festivals. And not just because you see a film first, which is definitely one of the perks, because it means that you're not walking in with baggage. Mm-hmm. You're able to see a film without going, okay, well, I know that it was shot here and it made this much and it cost this much and so-and-so walked off set because of this, that, the other thing. You are able to go in and just see a movie. And it's a gift. It honestly is. We're very fortunate to have that opportunity. It also, though, in talking a bit about seeing films that may not necessarily be your cup of tea by description, it also puts you in a very different space where you can see a movie that you otherwise wouldn't, whether it's because it gets a lot of good buzz. And you're responding to that, or it could just be as simple as someone next to you says, oh, well, I'm going to go see this movie. And you go, well, you know, actually, I have 3 hours until the next one I want to see. I might as well give it a shot.
Yep.
And all of us, we've had the experience of saying, well, screw it, I'll just go see this. And if it's terrible,
some of our best experiences come about that way.
Yep.
From listening to the buzz online. When I say online, standing in line.
Yes, exactly.
Standing in line for a
human
movie.
In line.
Right.
Human in the line, yes.
And it's great. The sense of discovery is one of my favorite things about film festivals. And I'm not talking about going to Cannes. I'm not talking about going to the big festivals. They're fine too. But if you're in a community that has a film festival, maybe it's a documentary festival, maybe it's a short film festival, or maybe you live near a town or a city that has a sizable film festival. Give it a try.
And nowadays, pretty much everywhere has a film festival.
Yes, every street corner.
It does. And again, living in Los Angeles, we love seeing signs for, you know, it's like this street film festival sponsored by Cheetos.
Yeah. Every year we go to the Santa Barbara International Film Festival because I usually host some events there. and we go up for a weekend. We can't stay over very long. But while I'm there, and I'm usually doing a tribute or an interview with somebody, I try to see what's playing, if anything catches my eye. Well, several years ago, they had postcards printed up with the one-sheet ads for certain movies. And I met a filmmaker who said, oh, you really ought to see this New Zealand movie called Good for Nothing. I hear it's really good. So somebody touted me on this movie. It was playing Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Well, I'm in Santa Barbara. I want to sleep in. But this movie sounded really interesting. So my wife and I, Alice and I, got up early, went to the theater. One of the things I like about the Santa Barbara Festival is that the community really supports it.
They do.
They show up. They show up at all hours to see all kinds of movies. We went to see this little but ambitious little New Zealand-made Western called Good for Nothing, written and directed by Mike Wallace, not spelled like the newscaster, but W-A-L-L-I-S, and produced by his leading lady, Inga Rademeyer. And they were both there. That's another great thing about festivals is getting to hear the filmmakers speak. Always interesting.
Yep.
Invariably interesting. This film, which is now out on DVD, I don't know if it's streamable or not. I hope it is. It's called Good for Nothing. And it's about a young woman traveling west. I think she's from England, if I'm remembering correctly. She's going out west to because she's lost her family member. She's going to live on a ranch run by her uncle. And things don't go as planned. And she winds up with this unkempt, uncivilized fellow kidnapping her.
I hate when that happens.
It was shot in widescreen. I'm so glad I got to see it on a theater screen. I watched it subsequently on DVD. It still played well. But it was so beautifully shot on magnificent New Zealand locations. It's a shame it can't be seen on a theater screen all the time. But this is a really original, clever, well-made movie, made on a very small budget. They bought some of their props on eBay. They scrounged favors from friends. But this team, this man and woman, put together a really good movie. One of the best Westerns I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Has a very low profile. I think it did open here briefly. It had a small distribution. But if you can see Good for Nothing, I think you'll have, even though I've touted it now, the same sense of discovery that I did watching it. And that was because somebody said, hey, you ought to check this out.
Yep.
Now, had I been home, had I just had dinner at home and it meant getting in the car, driving somewhere? No, I was at a film festival. That's what I love about film festivals.
And he will be going actually this week to Telluride for the film festival, which
yes.
we've been going there my entire life. You've been going there longer than I've been alive. And there too, we've had so many incredible experiences seeing movies that you just wouldn't normally see. There's also something, and it's you hear movie buffs say this a lot, but it's true. Sitting with an audience is in large part what makes movie going a wonderful experience. Obviously, we've all had really terrible experiences too, where someone has their cell phone or anything like that. But again, with film festivals, a lot of times cell phone equals you get kicked out. So that tends to be watched. But being in a room with a bunch of other people who are excited and interested and want to be there, there's very little like it. It's buzz.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also, I mean, it's the closest thing you can sort of get to live theater, where it's the same thing, sitting in an audience and hearing other people laugh. That's the only thing I miss when we go to screenings, is an audience that enjoys what they're watching. Is sometimes you when you're sat in a room full of critics, they tend not to respond as much as regular people would.
Well, last year at Telluride, I found myself after the lunch break sitting outside in the beautiful Rocky Mountain air outside the Sheridan Opera House, which is the reason the festival exists. It's this jewel box of a theater.
Gorgeous.
It's built something like 1912. I'm probably getting the year wrong, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't seat many, about 225 people, but it is just a wonderful little theater. And I couldn't decide what movie I wanted to see. I had like six choices. which is the curse of the Telluride Film Festival. You always have too many choices.
It's only 4 days long. So whereas you have with something like Sundance, you could have 10 days or some of these other festivals that go on for a long time. Telluride is cram in as much as you possibly can.
I couldn't decide. And then I saw a friend getting online for the next showing right at the Opera House. I had to be sitting there at a picnic bench eating a hot dog. I waved hello and I went over to talk to her. And as we were chatting, I guess Alice was at it. You and Alice were both elsewhere.
Yeah.
I said, what are you going to see? She said, I'm going to see Ethan Hawke's documentary, Seymour, An Introduction. I had read one line about it in the program book. I said, well, maybe I'll just go with you. She said, fine, we'll sit together. So we went, and I knew nothing about this film except it had something to do with a musician. That's all I knew. Went in, the theater sold out, an eager audience to see this film, Ethan Hawke's debut as a documentarian, I believe. He's done many other things. He's a writer, he's a poet, he's tried and a director. He's made other films as a filmmaker. This was new. It's a portrait of a fascinating man named Seymour Bernstein, who started out as a concert pianist, was on that track for many, many years, and when he turned about 40, he realized he wasn't enjoying it, it wasn't fulfilling anymore, and he changed. He turned his life around. He became instead a teacher and a mentor to younger musicians and students. And that's what he's become and spent 40 years or more doing and having a tremendous impact on a couple of generations of musicians. He's a very inspiring guy. And you could feel the audience. You could feel that we were all communally having the same experience being drawn into this movie and into this man's story. And when at the end of the film, the lights in the theater went up and there on stage was Ethan Hawke with Seymour Bernstein, the guy we'd just seen profiled on film, the place went mad. An ovation, not an obligatory ovation, a spontaneous and heartfelt ovation. Wow. What an experience that was. And I'm happy to say I saw it a second time at Ebert Fest, at Chaz Ebert's wonderful film festival in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, where she continues her husband Roger's mission to show interesting movies and bring interesting filmmakers to an audience, a very loyal audience there. And I got to interview Mr. Bernstein on stage a little bit afterwards with Scott Foundas, my colleague and friend. And it held up completely on a second showing and captivated that audience too. Now, it's been acquired by IFC.
Yeah, we were looking this up because we wanted to make sure that we could give you sort of the most – we wanted to figure out a way for you to be able to see this film.
I don't
and
think
let
it's available.
Me tell you.
I don't think it's available right now as we speak.
No, you can pre-order it on Amazon, and it's coming out in November.
Something like that.
And then you can get it on iTunes in January.
That's what we found.
That's what we found. It does have it. If you go to the IFC website, though, they have it. It's Seymour : An Introduction.
Yep. It's worth waiting for, and it's worth seeking out.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that I saw. This is an example of a film I saw on the spur of the moment.
Yep.
Spontaneously, because I was already there at this film festival, and it happened. Just happened like that. We had – Jesse and I had a similar experience last year when we went to Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas.
Similar to our other experiences in that it was wild and fun, but so different because it was a completely different audience than what we're used to being around. These young people who are fired up and love what they're doing. It takes place at the Alamo Drafthouse. Which is, as is, if you don't know about the Alamo Drafthouse, it at this point has quite a reputation.
There's a thriving film community there.
Very much so.
People like Richard Linklater and Robert Rodriguez and a number of others call it home. And not just home, but it's kind of their research and development lab too, because they hang out with creative people in a creative community. And
it is one hell of a community.
Yeah.
The people who run Fantastic Fest could not be lovelier. We had, separate of the films even, we just had We had a fantastic time at Fantastic Fest. It was a blast. But my dad was on one of the juries. Now, we didn't know very much about Fantastic Fest. I knew that it existed. I knew that I had friends that went who loved it. And I knew that it would be a neat experience for us. So I said to my dad, we should do this. I think we should go. And he was looking at they said he could be on one of the juries. And we're trying to figure out which one.
Because this is a genre festival.
It's a genre festival.
And it's a genre that I'm very squeamish about.
Primarily, you know, scary and suspense films. And he said, well, there's one it's comedy, essentially. How bad could that be? We said to ourselves.
Yeah.
And then found out. It was wonderful. And we loved it. And my dad ended up seeing movies that he would never have seen otherwise because they fall under the fear category. And my favorite actually was my dad went to see a movie without me in the morning. And come the afternoon, I'm still not hearing from him. And I'm going, all right, well, someone's kidnapped him. One of the movie nerds has kidnapped him and he is now their slave and I'm never going to see him again. Great. Well, no, I finally get him on the phone. He had bumped into, in the sort of lobby where everyone hangs out, Jonah Ray, Kumail Nanjiani, and Edgar Wright. Now, I'm a big fan of Jonah and Kumail, and I went to Meltdown and watched them host for years. They're wonderful. And so I'd explained, my dad now knows who they are and prior to that experience knew who they were, but he did not understand how excited I was for him to be with them. And then Edgar, we've gotten to spend a bit of time with.
Edgar was on the jury, the U.S. Dramatic Jury at Sundance this year,
yep.
Which I did last year.
So we got to
compare notes, which was very interesting. But he has an insatiable appetite for movies.
Yes.
I can't. He told me how many he saw at Sundance this year.
Probably 372.
From dawn till the wee hours.
He's a movie lover.
Yeah.
So hearing that is who he's with, I'm going, why am I not with you? You're sat with these three amazing people. And he ended up seeing, they were all going to go in to see a movie called The Babadook.
The Babadook, Australian movie.
It is now, it's on TV sometimes and it's out and about a bit. But at that point, he knew nothing about it. But he bumped into the guys.
And they were all going and I said, well, I don't want to be the party pooper here. I'll go.
So there he goes in to see this movie. And I just want to know, whose hand did you hold?
Well, no, I had to just sort of, I had to make do.
Miss me and mommy, didn't you?
Yeah.
Miss crying under our shoulders, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. But see, it's an eerie movie. It's a creepy movie.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of film better than gore and horror. I mean, it's a scary movie, but it's very well done, written and directed by Jennifer Kent, and who got a lot of attention for it. And I think we'll probably springboard her to other things in a bigger career. But it's one I wouldn't have chosen to see on my own, that's for sure. Nor would I have chosen to see, I think I already plugged this on the podcast before, Dead Snow 2,
yeah.
Red versus Dead.
I call it Dead Snow 2 Electric Boogaloo, but that's just me.
Well, I mean, it's a film that is so preposterously gory, so ridiculously over-the-top violent that you can't take it seriously. You can only take it as cartoonish and has a wicked sense of humor, very dark sense of humor, and I found it very funny. And I'm the least likely candidate to have enjoyed this movie, but I did. I still haven't sought out the original Dead Snow, which is about Nazi zombies, by the way, if you were wondering. But I sure like Dead Snow 2. Go figure.
Yeah.
Go figure.
And that's what the whole time we were there, that's what it was like, was sort of going, well, if, again, it's standing in line, it's standing in a lobby, it's talking to people and going, well, that sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to give that a shot.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you find yourself, and mind you, we've had terrible experiences too.
We've had
a few. A personal favorite for me was in Telluride. We went to see this movie, didn't know very much about it at all. Called Black Swan. And we sat there, me, the first, I think, 45 minutes where it's very, where the camera's jumping up and down a lot. I thought I was going to throw up. I have my head on his shoulder and I'm going, I'm going to die. This is how I'm going to die, watching this movie and choking on my own vomit because I'm so sick
from
the camera work.
Now, of course, a lot of people love that movie.
No. So this was one of the few times where I wish I would have known more about the film, mm-hmm. because then we would have known what we were getting into.
Yeah.
Instead of having no idea, and the two of us sat there. I think my favorite, the way that I describe this, is we looked at each other and we looked like the audience in The Producers.
Watching the Springtime for
if
Hitler.
If you recall
number.
Springtime for Hitler, and you see the audience at one point, that's what my dad and I looked like sitting there going, what in the world did we just witness? And then, again, because you have the director there and you have all these people, people in the audience are standing up and during the Q&A and crying, saying what an amazing movie it was and all this. And it was one that – it's a movie that I respect. I respect what they did. I just didn't like it. I tried watching it again and then again a second time. Nope, still don't like it. And I know a lot of people do love it. I know that some people think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and that's completely fine. It's your opinion. But that was definitely one of those where we came out looking like we'd been through a war, going, what just happened? Why?
And then hearing people call it brilliant. So that's yeah. that's what makes horse races.
And that too, though, is having those conversations.
Yeah.
I always tell my friends this. Don't fight with someone over a movie. Discuss the movie. Because you are going to have differing opinions on absolutely everything. Again, in our house, it's fairly constant. But, you know, you have to at least – going back to this, you have to at least be willing to give it a try. Yeah. To me, it's the equivalent when you ask someone what kind of music they like, and they'll say, I like everything except country and opera. I go, well, that's kind of – that's a blanket, isn't it? You don't know. You might like something. And that's how it is to me with film. It's the exact same way, where people sort of knee-jerk reaction. I'm not watching a foreign film because mm-hmm. I don't want to read subtitles. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't watch a foreign film with subtitles when I'm trying to relax. That's not what I put on to relax. But absolutely, I'm not going to not watch a movie just because it's foreign. Mm-hmm. There was a movie. It was on last night, and I watched again for the first time in a very long time called Dirty Pretty Things.
Oh, great movie!
And it stars Chiwetel Ejiofor and Audrey Tautou. Mm-hmm. And I saw this because I had driven my dad to the screening, and I wasn't planning on watching the movie. But once I got there, I kind of went, well, I'm here. I might as well. And it's incredible. And
written by Stephen Knight, the creator of Peaky Blinders.
Which you love.
And Locke. Yeah. Writer and director of Locke, yep. Tom Hardy's film, and directed by Stephen Frears.
Yeah.
It's got great pedigree.
It really – and watching it again, it made me really happy to see that the movie is just as good as I remember.
That's a really
better,
good film.
Really, better yeah. than I remember even.
So we're going to take one final break, and then we'll wrap this up. We'll be back with one extra little tidbit for you.
Hey, everybody. This is Baron Vaughn from Malt and Own Movies with Baron Vaughn. Some of you might know that in addition to being a huge fan of movies, I sometimes show up in them, for I am an actor. And currently, right now, I'm on a Netflix, that's how you spell it, N-E-N-E-T-flix, no, just Netflix, a Netflix original series called Grace and Frankie. Grace is played by Jane Fonda. Frankie is played by Lily Tomlin. I play the adopted son of Lily Tomlin and Sam Waterston. And Jane Fonda's husband is played by Martin Sheen. But are they the husbands of their wives? That's sort of the conceit of the show. Check it out. It's streaming on Netflix right now, Grace and Frankie.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin, and you are?
I'm Jesse. Hi.
Yes, you are. Jesse Maltin, in fact. And we're here on Maltin on Movies with Baron Vaughn, but without Baron Vaughn today.
Okay.
There's one other aspect of movie going we want to discuss briefly, and that's preview trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally, I avoid them. In fact, I avoid them like the plague.
Like the plague.
And I'm the guy, if you go into a theater and you see somebody sitting on an aisle with his head down and his hands over his ears, that's me. Because if I see a trailer that I get the sense is giving me too much, is going to spoil too much of a movie, that's what I do. I even hum. You know, to myself, so I won't hear the soundtrack.
So if you see him in a theater, he's not having a stroke. It is it is just what he does to trailers.
But sometimes I get hooked and I get suckered in and I watch. Well, I went to what we used to call in the old days an art theater. I went to one of the Lemley theaters here in Los Angeles, a wonderful independent family-owned theater chain that shows good films, a lot of art films, independent films, documentaries and such, to see Woody Allen's newest film, which I had missed. And there was a trailer for a film I had just screened The Night Before, called The Second Mother. It's a Brazilian film, just opened here in L.A., and I think also in New York. And having just seen the movie, I watched this preview, and I said, that's a perfect trailer. It gives away just enough. It teases you. It gives you just enough of the setup to make you want to see it. That, to me, is a great trailer.
I've never understood why a trailer would mislead someone in the sense of the tone of a movie. It's almost like at times all they feel like the audience only cares about comedy, mm-hmm. or can only handle comedy. We don't want to show this as being too serious or whatever it is. Or a lot of the times, all the good jokes are in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
So we both have the same reaction, especially if we see a movie we like and then see the trailer and go, well, you're not doing it justice at all.
Yeah.
You're not doing it justice at all. And if I saw this trailer, I wouldn't want to see the movie.
It's happened over and over and over again. And I find that when audiences can smell deception, I think, in a trailer, if they're being snookered.
Is that the name of your memoir?
No.
Audiences Can Smell Deception.
If they're being snookered, if they're being misled that this is a comedy when it isn't,
yeah.
It may have some lighter moments.
They get pissed.
Yes. I think they know. They sense it
they
somehow.
They are not happy. And that's one of the things I read more than anything else in responses to certain films is that if you say that it's a comedy and you give someone a heart-rending drama, they ain't going to be happy with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the same way that when you do spoil all of the good jokes in a trailer, it's like, well, but why'd you give all that away?
Yeah.
That seems a waste because now I've seen the trailer 800 times on TV or in a theater. And so when I'm seeing the movie and the line comes up, doesn't make me laugh.
No. It's an imperfect process, that's for sure. And I think there's so much insecurity now in the business.
They spend so much money on movies.
There's so much at stake. Yeah. Spent so much to make and release and distribute a film that they feel we got to give it away to get your fanny in the seat.
We need you so badly.
Yeah, we need you so badly to pay your admission and come and see this movie. Well, we're not going to solve that problem, unfortunately.
No.
But we did take
After that, we want world peace. But first, let's fix trailers.
Exactly. It's always fun talking movies with you.
Ditto. I like that we can carpool. my dad titled this episode Adventures in Movie Going. And I cannot stress enough how great it is to go to a film festival for exploration. If you're the type of person who loves movies or if you're just the type of person who's interested, look around. Inevitably, there's a film festival near you. Try stuff that maybe you're not initially thrilled by because you don't know. And worst case scenario, you can walk out. I mean, I have. He doesn't. He sits through everything.
Yeah.
My mom and I are not that way. We're like, see you later. Have a good time. I'm sorry you're wasting it. Anyway, you have to give different movies a chance. There's no reason not to. And also try to find theaters where you're not going to have the audience on their cell phones. Obviously, again, here you have Lemley, you have Arclight. Go to movie theaters where the audience is going to appreciate the film you are. And that way you're not sort of just completely closed off to it because seeing a film with other people is so much better. Again, I understand that nowadays the crowds can be difficult
for a lot of reasons. But a simpatico audience is a good audience.
There's just nothing better than seeing a movie with other people, hearing people laugh.
Yeah.
It's special.
Yep. Well, friends, that's our podcast for this week. And if you're lonely for me, hankering to hear me or read me, you can always find me at leonardmalton.com, my website. You can find me on Twitter at Leonard Malton. And until next time, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Hello, podcast listeners. It's me, Darren Toblerone. You might have heard me and my brother, Aaron Toblerone, on the California Supreme Wind Show, the only podcast all about California Supreme Windows, just minutes from the 405, your number one spot to get great deals on windows and now also door. But there are many more podcasts than just my brother's podcast. It's true, like with special guest Lauren Lapkus, for example. Every week she plays a different character and she's the guest of someone else. else who's playing another character who's the host. It's complicated, but it's also not. But it's also great, almost like a jigsaw puzzle. Listen to this.
Get off your knees, you damn idiot.
Oh, I love you, Regina.
Stand up. I'm going to give you osteoporosis in your knees with my cane. Stand up, you idiot.
I will, master.
Put on this ball gag, you bitch. Take it out. You liked it too much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mommy.
So sit by your favorite window and listen to with special guest Lauren Lapkus on earwolf.com, iTunes, or the podcast player of your choice. Doinky windows forever. Goodbye.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.